following takes place between 6 p.m. and 7 p.m.
Hello, and welcome to Tech Access Weekly, a podcast of unspecified length concerning news and events in accessible technology. This is episode 84 for Wednesday, March 9th, 2011. For mature audiences only. And hello, everyone. It's Wednesday already.
Yes, it is. And today has been heck.
Yes, absolutely. We thought moving it to Wednesday was going to be better.
Yeah, and then I had to go into work today, so then my transportation this afternoon was screwed up, which is just irritating when you're already like an hour and a half behind.
Yeah, well,
doesn't
so
help things.
Anyway, it's definitely not 6 and 7 p.m., but that's okay.
Well, it sort of is.
And somewhere in the world, yeah.
That's true. Ah, we're doing this show coming to you live from Chicago.
It's 6 o'clock somewhere.
Yeah, Chicago.
As the saying goes.
Somewhere in there.
And so, why don't we get started? We have a little bit of listener mail.
Why, yes, we do.
Sandy Thompson, a Code Factory beta tester, wrote us to talk a little bit more in depth about the Code Factory mobile accessibility screen reading software for the Android phone and the suite of products that goes along with it. She's been beta testing for them for several months now, is very impressed with the whole outfit, and thinks it works much better than the free screen reader for the Android, I guess, TalkBack and Spiel. That you can purchase in the Android App Store.
Yeah, apparently she would consider Spiel to be the screen reader of choice as far as the free versions that are out there.
Right. And she did say that €69, it was $95 to purchase it in the Android App Store. That was our question from last week.
Yeah, usually rule of thumb, it's either half a dollar more or a whole dollar more. You know, double the cost, I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
So $95 is not unreasonable.
No, I think that's perfectly fine. And she also points out that seeing as how it is version one, that it can only become better as far as being an Android screen reader.
Absolutely. And she gives in her email a lot of advice on actually how to use it, which could be very helpful.
Yeah, because I think she kind of answered some of the questions that have been going around on Twitter as far as the limitations that people were seeing that actually might not really be limitations.
Right. The email is too long to go into depth here, but we will put it into the show notes so that if you want to look at it, you can look at it.
Yeah, she goes into great detail. As I emailed her, I said it was quite a lot of information to digest.
Right.
So we greatly appreciate that.
Oh, absolutely.
And if you would like to follow her on Twitter, you can do so. She apparently has a seeing eye dog and is an Android developer, and she is basically being a beta tester for Code Factory. And you can follow her at Twitter as user ID 3K99MOMMY. And apparently she has only recently joined Twitter because she only has a couple of followers.
Yeah. So, you know, it was a very informative post. And so thank you, Sandy, so much for all your work. We really appreciate that.
Yeah, because I think people read press releases and descriptions of things and can kind of jump to conclusions before they actually use the software. And that's a big deal.
Absolutely. So.
Oh, and I would point out also that Tech Access Weekly, if you are looking for a way to listen on your mobile phone, TuneIn Radio now lists us.
Yay, TuneIn!
So you can pick that up in the iPhone App Store for $1.99.
Is it $1.99 or just $99?
Currently, it is on special for 99 cents. So look for TuneIn, all one word, T-U-N-E-I-N. There is also an Android version as well. So you can also find the Tech Access Daily Tips and Tech Access Weekly. So it's kind of cool.
Yay.
Awesome.
Fab.
I guess we'll have to start calling that the definitive choice for Tech Access listeners.
Oh, dear.
No?
No, let's not. Oh. It's always about giving people options.
Yeah. So we say.
Speaking of options.
Options?
One of the web browsers on the market just got an update recently.
Oh, why, yes, it did. Most people probably last week were alerted to Firefox 3.6.15. They recently jumped to 14, but it caused a issue with some of the Java applets that you might encounter on the internet. And this version 3.6.15 should fix those vulnerabilities and make it a little bit more stable.
Yeah, apparently some people were having problems with it crashing and things, and I didn't notice much, but there aren't really any really big changes except for that I can see. But if you want the latest code, if that's a concern, you may want to go ahead and update. I just update whenever it says I need to.
Yeah, or it tries to do it itself. Right. I pretty much say if there is an update, wait a day, see if anybody has any problems, then go for it. But I haven't encountered any issues with it.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of browsers, Microsoft has launched IE6Countdown.com. Why would they be counting down, you ask?
Because they will no longer be supporting Internet Explorer 6.
Yes, they would like the world to rid itself of the plague that is known as Internet Explorer 6. There's probably actually people still out there using 5.
I wouldn't be surprised at all.
But they probably aren't really on the internet that much using a dial-up connection. Mm. Anyway, they have created a nice graphical interface that shows you a map of the world, and it is color-coded so that you can see who has the most or least use of Internet Explorer 6.
China is up at the top with 35%?
Yeah, 34% in China, and let's see, South Korea has 24%. They are the bad offenders. But coming in at less than 1% is Finland at 0.9%. And Norway wins the title for least Internet Explorer 6 vulnerabilities at 0.7%.
Where's the U.S. in all this?
The U.S. is at a wonderful, wonderful 2.9%.
2.9%?
2.9%.
Oh, yes. My goodness.
So it's not too bad. And the folks in the UK are at 3.5%.
Oh, that's not too bad.
No.
Not too bad.
And let's see. Australia is also on the list. They're at 3.2%. And those crazy Kiwis over in New Zealand are at 3.1%. Oh. You bastards.
Hey. Oh,
sorry.
They just had an earthquake.
That's true. And Hugo Chavez needs to get on the ball because he's at 5% in Venezuela.
Hey, what about Libya?
Libya?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Libya. Oh, they don't list Libya.
Oh, okay.
I guess they just were not quite good enough. But I will say that India is at 12%.
What about Egypt? That's been in the news recently.
Egypt being in the news. Well, we might not be able to get a reading from them.
I thought their internet was back up.
Yeah, sort of. Let's see. Oh, they do not have Egypt on here.
Oh, okay. Okay, we're going a little overboard.
Japan is at 10%.
Okay, now we can stop now.
Oh, and your favorite place, France, where they don't have freedom fries, is at 3.9%.
Excuse me?
Well, you know, people didn't want to call French fries anymore, so they changed it to freedom fries.
Oh, yeah.
And Germany is at 2.9%.
Okay. We can stop this at any time.
You sure?
Yes.
Oh, and Canada, our folks to the north.
That's not really a country.
A country that is 3.3%. So take that. Ah!
Anyway.
I could read these stats all day, and that is actually updating live as we go.
That's bad.
Pretty much.
All right. Yesterday was Patch Tuesday.
Yesterday was Patch Tuesday.
Teeny, teeny little Patch Tuesday.
Yeah,
they seem to release fewer patches in odd-numbered months.
Yeah, I don't know what's with that.
Anyway, there were only 3 updates.
Well, there were 3 bulletins, basically, rather. And one of them was critical. The critical one actually related to Windows Media Player and Media Center. Apparently, there is a digital video recording file system that apparently has the .dvr-ms file extensions. Apparently, you can have this vulnerability enacted if you encounter iframes or possibly open an email that has malicious code in it. There's not really a word as to what the malicious code might do, but you do need to update. Or if you were like me, your computer decided it would reboot itself.
No wonder why Quitter wasn't up this morning. I wondered that. And then I read the article and figured out, oh, it must have rebooted during the night.
Yeah, that is so irritating.
I know.
I have turned it off to tell it not to do that, and next patch comes out and they reset it.
I never bother because it always resets, so I just let it go.
Yeah, but it's interfering with my BitTorrent. I mean,
Now, some torrents are legal.
That's true.
It's not
some Linux distributions.
Illegal.
That is very true.
Yes.
There are legal uses. Mm. Speaking of internet usage, WordPress last week had an attack from China.
Yes. Two, actually.
Yes. Two. And evidently it is still ongoing. Matt Mullenweg. Yeah, that's it.
The WordPress dude.
I am not good with names. Has anybody figured that out yet?
Obviously.
Okay. Matt Mullenweg, who appeared on the latest edition of This Week in Tech with Leo Laporte on Sunday, announced that, yes, it was an attack from China. It appeared to be a Chinese gaming website that was being attacked. Why? Not sure. It was estimated that maybe there were some sort of political implications, but apparently they have not been able to find anything like that. So if you encountered problems with websites being really slow, or if you host your website on WordPress.com...
And it was down,
you can attribute it to this. People that use WordPress.org, which means you're basically bringing your own copy of WordPress, like we do, to a
domain
server, were not affected.
Aha. Uh-huh. Good to know.
Hot diggity dog.
Woohoo!
Now, speaking of affecting, and speaking of Android that we were previously talking about, they have had a severe case of viruses.
Yes, 58 apps last week were found, new apps, I might add, were found to be infected with malware.
Yeah, and apparently what is going on is the fact that hackers are taking Android applications that are actually correct, downloading them, making new ones,
yeah,
and putting them back out. Apparently, there were only 21 thought to be the case on Friday and Saturday of last week, but on Monday, they realized that it was actually 58 apps that had been downloaded 260,000 times.
Oh, my gosh.
So this is one of those, that's the problem with Android.
They need to come out with an antivirus for Android. I wonder if they have one.
I believe they do have a couple of things. Not sure how well they work. So if you use a Android antivirus, please let us know.
Yeah, I'd like to know, actually.
Google, in preparation for these 58 apps, did actually use their remote kill switch. So they were able to actually take them off of phones. Apparently, the only information...
That's cool.
I know. And scary, too, because they can just sort of reach into your phone and take it away.
I know.
Kind of like, what was the book, 1984, uh-huh, that got wiped remotely from Kindle?
Whoa, it did?
Yeah, last year. We reported on it.
Oh, yeah.
Go back to the archive.
I think it was 1984.
And here I was thinking, people really listen to this podcast. You don't even listen.
No, I put it together and I don't even listen.
Oh, that's true. But anyway, they were able to do this. Apparently, there was not really any personal information that was leaked. It was the IMEI number, which basically identifies your phone,
mm-hmm,
is mostly the information that was leaked.
Yeah.
So you might want to be a little bit careful with what you download from Android, because they don't moderate it like Apple does.
No, they don't. That doesn't mean that things couldn't sneak into Apple.
That's true. They have had problems with iTunes and the App Store as far as leaking things and putting bad little programs in there.
Speaking of iTunes, it just had an update itself.
Why, yes.
10.2.
Yeah, they launched 10.2 that would actually give you access to the AirPlay and preparations for iOS 4.3 and the new iPad 2 coming out. Right on the heels of that, they released another patch that takes iTunes up to 10.2.1,
mm-hmm,
to fix some small bugs. I hadn't really been able to find specifically what the change was.
I'm not sure. I thought it was.
It was like something that was minimal.
It was. I thought it was really Macintosh related, but.
Well, iTunes was having some sort of a security issue. They also released a OS X update for Leopard and Snow Leopard that will fix Java by adding some compatibility, security, and reliability for the JSE that you can download. Also provides 64-bit support.
And 2 days ahead of schedule, iOS 4.3 came out today.
Yes, and I have updated my phone. Took probably about 15 minutes, would you say, for it to go through its gyrations once I click download.
I haven't even started that yet.
Yeah, it is a 670 megabyte download, so you might want to go make a pot of tea.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed one thing in the release notes that was kind of interesting. You will actually be able to set the number of times that alerts will ding you,
mm-hmm.
which is a great thing because I get text messages at work, and if I walk away and leave my phone on my desk or something, it might go off. But then if I come back and don't look at it, I don't know that it went off.
That happens to me all the time. I leave it in the office, go down, talk to somebody, and then it's like jabbering at me that the screen is dimmed and the screen is locked. And I'm like, I never touched it.
Yeah.
Come to find out I have a message. So,
exactly.
Some people who have updated to 4.3 have been noticing, if they use VoiceOver, that the four-finger swipe up and down gesture no longer works for them. I've never been able to get it to work for me anyway, so I'm not really concerned, but it will move. I'm not even exactly sure what it's supposed to do, but people say it's not working. So be aware of that. If that's a gesture that you use, it may not work correctly.
I did see on here on Twitter just before we started this that someone had mentioned that if you do a four-finger tap.
Yes, the four-finger tap.
But I tried it, and my fat, pudgy finger sitting on the screen, I can't really do it anyway. I couldn't get it to do anything.
Well, I've never been able to get that one to work.
So if someone can explain this crazy thing, please let us know, because I'm
puzzled.
And
I know I don't have big fingers, and I've never, ever been able to get that four-finger tap to work.
Yeah.
So.
But, and...
One other thing about iOS 4.3, the iPhone 3G is no longer supported.
Very true. So you knew it was probably coming at some point, either 4.3 or version 5 of iOS. Mm-hmm. So now 3GS is the last supported iPhone. And this update is only for AT&T.
Ah, yes, not Verizon.
And we're not really sure exactly why Verizon is not getting the update to 4.3, but we assume that it is because they received a prior update that gives them most of the functionality like the AirPlay and hotspot, which GSM phones on AT&T did not have.
I'd also like to mention the Insight Expo. It occurred last Saturday, March 5th, in Houston, Texas. A variety of sponsors, but it was mainly geared towards helping the visually impaired community in Houston, the people find resources and networking opportunities and a bunch of other things, both technology related and not. One of our listeners, Ron Graham, was one of the leaders in creating this and putting this event together. And I thought I'd mention it because this happens and CSUN is going to be happening next week. So all of these events are kind of the same things happen. CSUN is more of a conference, but I think they still have some exhibits. So if you want to find out more about this, what resources and exhibits were there, you can email...
R. Graham, RGRAHAM at CEBRIDGE.net.
So I don't know if they're planning to put this on in 2012 or not.
Yeah, and you never know. You may have a university in your area that may want to get information and try and organize your own event.
And if you want more information about what was there and what happened, you can look in our show notes. We do have an article on the Insight Expo.
Why, yes, we do. And the mainstream keeps recognizing visually impaired products.
Yay, it's happening again. We talked a few weeks ago about how the NVDA project was having some funding issues and they would not be around after July if they did not receive any donations or other monetary support. Well, Now the sighted community knows about what NVDA is and what it does as well. SourceForge has made NVDA its project of the month. Every month, SourceForge takes an open source product that, it hosts. SourceForge hosts downloads of open source software and puts together a questions and answers entry on that product detailing the basics of what it does, who developed it, and what it's used for. So NVDA is their project for March.
That's amazing, seeing as how they're trying to do a big fundraiser.
I know.
I don't wonder if they asked to be considered for that.
They may have. Yeah, I don't know how that works. But anyway, I thought we'd point that out. That's fantastic.
Yeah, and I will put that link to the SourceForge article on the TechAccessWeekly.com post for this podcast.
Yeah.
Also, that and the Android article from earlier.
Yes.
Now, Casper, the friendly robot, is going to help autistic children.
Yeah, Casper, it's a research project in England. And what happens is there's this robot, and he's like, well, he looks like a Cabbage Patch doll, apparently.
That's kind of what he looks like to me.
Baseball cap and, you know, all this.
My buddy.
Got dressed up and everything. And he will interact with children. They're trying to use this as a research test for children, like a preschool age, to help them, if they are autistic, recognize emotions. So this robot will wave his arms and smile and dance around and, you know, have sad faces and things just to show, I guess, children what the emotions, what body language is exhibited with each emotion. So beyond that, I'm not exactly sure how it works, but currently it costs in the thousands of dollars to manufacture one of these.
Yes, and 2,100 American.
Yeah, and the researchers are hoping that they can get it down to like $200 or $300 so that schools can have them. Public schools who are educating autistic children, young ages, can have them, I think.
Yeah, and you may want to check that out in the show notes on Delicious, because they had some different reactions that kids had, and that was kind of cool, the fact that the kids that were usually unresponsive to people were actually enthused about seeing Casper.
The robot, yeah.
And were actually reacting to sadness and happiness and things where they were not doing that before.
Yeah, that was great. Very interesting. Another device that's being researched in England, and I really want one of these, it actually has been patented. It is called the Mic Array. It is for the hard of hearing. It's basically like a microphone setup, and it monitors the noises in any given room, and somehow it enables a person who is listening to things, it enables them to choose what noises they want to focus on and make those louder. It's sort of like the awareness app for the iPhone, but it's its own device.
Yeah, Dr. Banu Gunel, G-U-N-E-L, developed the technology at the University of Surrey's Center of Communications.
Yes.
That sounds outstanding because in a noisy room, it's difficult for anybody to hear.
I know.
If you would actually be able to say, okay, I don't want to hear the dog barking. I just want to hear the voice.
Right. And it's not clear, at least to me, what this is. Is it like a handheld device? You know, what is it? So, you know, I'd like a little more clarification on what it looks like.
Yeah. Is it the size of a boom mic, which is like twice the size of two loaves of bread put together, you know?
Or can you just carry it around with you?
Yeah.
Does it have a little screen where it shows you what the sounds are?
The two articles we had didn't show anything as far as a picture.
So we can't give you much more detail on that, but that is really cool. Hopefully it comes into the mainstream market soon and we can learn more about it.
Why, yes. And
speaking of things that have come into the mainstream market, at least in the App Store,
there's a really cheap money reader.
Yeah, well, the iBill, which is currently the cheapest hardware money identifier that I know of for U.S. currency, is like $98.
And isn't it like a glasses case or something that you have to open and close?
Yeah. The iPhone and iPod Touch and whatever has a camera, has an app that will identify currency also. It is called LookTel. It was released today, or yesterday, I think, by iPlex. And it is $1.99.
And it's LookTel, LookTel, all one word.
Yes. And it is $1.99 in the Apple App Store.
So I'm kind of wondering if people have used this, how it compares to, say, something like Omobi that is more free. Flexible and free.
Well, Omobi identifies really anything. It can identify currency, but I'm wondering how it stands up to the test of identifying the currency, since I think that's really the only thing that Looktel does, and I'm having a hard time justifying paying $1.99 for something that I think I can get Omobi to do.
Yeah, that's didn't you say they were saying something about maybe adding support for FaceTime?
Well, it was, I saw this on some article that I read. I don't think we have it bookmarked, but they are thinking about in Looktel offering something like FaceTime calling to friends or family, and you can ask them what something is over FaceTime. Why exactly you couldn't just do it over FaceTime without the app, I don't know.
Maybe they're going to create an interface that makes it easier to switch the direction of the camera from you to the rear camera, maybe. I don't know.
Huh, they might.
Might make it a little bit more accessible by chance.
RFBND Recordings for the Blind and Dyslexic has released an iPhone app. We talked about the fact that they were going to release one at ATIA, but it apparently has been released now.
ATIA for the civilized.
Yes, it is $19.99 in the App Store, and it allows you to do the same sorts of things that you can do with the Bookshare app, or of course the Victor Reader Stream if you've got another hardware device, reading RFBND books, which are Daisy books that have been recorded. You have to be an RFBND member, of course. Allow you to read the books, navigate through them, place bookmarks, change the speed of the reading, and basically the other things you would expect from a digital reader.
Now, can you play those kind of books on, say, the Victor?
Yes, but you have to have a certain key.
Ah, okay.
Just like for NLS books, okay. You have to have a certain key.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen a few tweets on Twitter saying that they were discouraged that it was yet another reader app that was going to cost $20.
Yeah.
Just like the Bookshare app.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for me, I don't have something like a Victor or one of the other types of devices, but I do have an iPhone. So to me, paying $20 for one of these apps would be a heck of a lot cheaper than buying an actual physical device and giving me something else that I would need to carry around.
That's true.
You know, I think that gets left out of the equation.
It does.
A little bit when people are thinking about, oh my God, it's $20.
I mean, if I didn't have Victor, I would probably be and I was an RFBND member or a Bookshare member, I would be purchasing that.
Yeah, and if they've
I wouldn't find that unreasonable at all.
I mean, and like with the Bookshare app, they spend a lot to get the licenses for the voices and that kind of thing that you're able to use. So that's where a lot of the money went. But hey, maybe these companies will be smart and actually offer a special at some point, you know, like on the history of the birthday of Braille being created. Maybe they'll offer it for half price or something to sort of build enthusiasm for it.
Maybe. But
we'll see.
Hmm.
Just my take on it from somebody that doesn't have one of these devices like most of the listeners seem to.
No, I agree. And now, moving on to an iPhone app that is not accessibility related, but if you are a college basketball fan here in the U.S., it is almost certainly a must-have.
Yes, the NCAA tournament is upon us. It will be starting on Tuesday of next week with play-in games. The 68-team field will take the court, competing for a championship that will end in April. CBS and the NCAA have come out with a free iPad and iPhone app called March Madness on Demand. This will actually give you live video and stats for all 68 games.
Wow.
These games will be covered on your local television and probably some radio stations as well. This is the first time that they have offered a free app. I believe in 2009 they offered one for $5 and $10 last year, but this time they're going for the free market. If only I had unlimited data.
Yeah, well, too bad.
I know. I'll have to sit there at the office going, okay, nobody's looking. I can bring up CBS Sportsline. Refresh. Who lost? And then hide the screen really quickly. Although at one point, maybe they'll bring back the boss button, which was a button that you could hit and it would automatically bring up a spreadsheet.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, that was awesome.
That's wonderful. I love it.
Bizarre and strange in the workplace. What were you
thinking? We need to ask Apple, what was it thinking? In nice, respectful terms, of course. I really want to know what the deal is with this decision. Recently, Opera became available in the Mac App Store. I can't say that. In the Mac App Store.
Well, they want a trademark App Store.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Opera became available, but you cannot download it from the Mac App Store if you are 17 years or younger.
Is it that you can't download it, or does it give you a warning saying you must be, are you 17?
It gives you a warning that you must be 17. I don't know that there's a physical way of prohibiting you from downloading it.
I guess they could if you had a specific account, maybe.
Maybe. But I know that you at least get a warning that says you cannot download this if you are 17 years old or younger. And there's really no explanation. It even says something like, if you'd like to use Opera, you can download it from another source, I think, or something. But it will not let you download it from the app, from the Mac Store, if you're 17 or younger. Or
that's weird.
It puts up weird announcements about it. So,
I mean, I had downloaded the Craigslist app just for the heck of it because of people at work were saying, oh, well, they were having to check ads that they had put out and things like that. So I downloaded it. Crappy app. Not that their site's much better anyway. But every time there is an update, it says this application could contain mature material. Are you over 17 years of age?
I mean, Craigslist, I get that. They have, you know, the adult areas and everything with those kinds of services. But Opera? It's a web browser.
I don't know. Maybe it's Apple's way of saying, well, I guess you could go and get porn with that.
That's what people were thinking. But of course, you can go get porn with Safari.
Yeah.
And they don't have any prohibitions on downloading anything Safari related. I don't think. So,
and I've got the Skyfire app on my phone that actually allows you to play Flash video on your iPhone. And it doesn't have anything like that. Maybe it's just a slight at Apple, at Opera by Apple.
Maybe.
You know.
It's possible, but... Yeah, I mean, they say something on there like you can go to opera.com to download the browser, but you cannot download it from the Mac Store.
Only mature audience allowed.
I guess.
I don't know. That's a bizarre one. I know a lot of tech reporters have been saying, why?
Yeah.
But no clue.
We haven't heard any explanation. So if anyone knows, please let us know.
I may have to download it just to see what it says.
Well, I don't know if it's the iPhone version, but I know it happened with the Mac version.
Yeah.
So
I'll have to download. I'll have to download it for the iPhone and see.
Yeah. Well. Anyway.
Anyway, this disaster and chaos, mass confusion that you have been listening to is Tech Access Weekly, episode
85. No, I mean 84. No, I mean 84.
You sure?
Sort of.
Okay.
You can get.
It's not the book that was banned by
Kindle.
No.
You can get more information about the stories we considered for this podcast by going to delicious.com/techaccess/...
85, no, 84.
84.
No, you do not have to type 85, no, 84. Now, that would be funny. I may have to change it to that just
No.
No,
don't do that. Mm-hmm. 84. To email us commentary and all that kind of stuff. Including how terrible we are.
Visit the website or listen to the closing credits.
Yes.
If you would like to contribute tips and such, as some people have over time for daily tips, please contact us and we can get you set up with how to do that.
Absolutely.
If you have ideas for tips or things that you just want to know how in the heck to do, or you think, man, that's easy, but a lot of people I run into just don't know how to do it, let us know. So we can put it out as a tip and enlighten everyone else. Plus, we'll give you credit for suggesting it.
Absolutely.
But everything is moving along.
Yes.
And I will, as stated before, I will put the NVDA article on SourceForge in the webpage posting for this, and I will also include the email commentary from Sandy on Android accessibility.
Absolutely. So, we will see everyone next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye. To contact the team for Tech Access Weekly, send an email to techaccessweekly@gmail.com. You may follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/TA_weekly. You may comment on our voice line at 260-2-ASK-TAW, 260-227-5829. To find a list of the stories covered in each episode, please visit delicious.com/techaccess. Feel free to visit our website at techaccessweekly.com.